You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Making Waves. Welcome to my house. I'm lazy like a Saturday. Welcome to my house. I'm ugly like the seven sand. Welcome to my house. I'm broken like my heritage. Welcome to my house. Thank you guys. We appreciate you taking the time. I know the time difference there, so you're getting a little later in the evening. So we'll get to the conversation. Al and I have been talking about this interview. I'm saying Yonaka. Is it Yonaka?
Yonaka.
Yeah. There we go. Okay, very good. See? Al's from New York. So he goes, is it New York like yo? I'm like, yes, I believe it's yo.
A lot of people say it like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, some people go Yonaka.
Yonaka.
Yon.
Well, I can say Yonaka because it is a Japanese term.
It is.
So, we
got taught how to say it, didn't we? It was like very like on one. It's like, but it's still Yonaka.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Let's talk about the new album, new EP. Is it are the albums or the EPs these days?
I know, and I hate calling it an EP because I feel like it just makes it like a smaller thing, and I just don't know why it doesn't sound like it's this thing, like it's like had a lot of work put into it. Whereas an album, this is it. Yeah. This is the big thing.
But there's two points there to think. A, they look at the price point. If it's an EP, it's more consumer friendly as far as the price, right? But what also constitutes making an album? Does it have to be 60 minutes? Does it have to be 10 songs? What does it have to be?
Yeah, I think it has to be around 10 or 11 songs. Yeah.
Okay. So
we actually did want it to be an album originally. Mm-hmm. But like after like a lot of chats with label and stuff, we decided to do an EP, but there is an album coming.
Yeah, we're working on an album now, the full length.
So, but the thing is like the benefit of your EP is it's all killer, no filler, right? These are the songs, right? There's six songs that are just going to actually floor you and you're going to hit repeat all the time. So there is a benefit in that because of our attention deficit world we live in now.
Yeah.
Seven songs to them is like an album.
Yeah.
So I pivot. So this album, it's super easy to want to put people in the genres, like either this or this or that. Mm-hmm. You guys kind of ran the gamut here.
Man, totally. Mm-hmm. Totally.
And I'd really like to talk about your process there. Like, hey, we're going to make, is it a discussion you have in the studio or say, hey, we need something a little bit more upbeat, a little bit more rock. Here's something that's a little bit more ethereal. How do you decide that? Or is it just basically, hey, this is a great song. If it's seven great hard rock songs, that what we go with? Or do you say, hey, we really have to vary it up so we can kind of expand our base?
Mm. Well, we write a lot of different kind of songs. And so when we go into writing, we'll kind of just, it's usually on a feeling. So I could be like upset or angry and I'd be like, oh, I just want to fucking talk about this because this is pissing me off, or I want to talk about this because this is really upsetting me, or I love this. And
it's very dependent on the mood of that particular day, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I don't think we sort of sit down before and be like, we need a rock song today.
Yeah. It's never a rock song, but it will be like, let's write something fucking angry because this is how I feel after getting off the phone with that person. And there'll be like a motive behind it. Or sometimes, you know, Al will just have like a beat or something and he'll play it to me and I'll be like, oh, I love that. And I'll start like singing over it or like kind of just like working out what I'm going to do. So it changes.
Yeah. Or it could be like we're listening to an album we love, or oftentimes we'll like watch a, we'll watch a film that we love and then we'll get inspired and then immediately go and start writing something. So,
right. Or if Alex, you come up with a lick or a riff or a beat or something like that, I mean, that alone can either change your mood or create a mood or any of those things. Like if there's something that's really, that's really moody or minor, all of a sudden, you know, Teresa, you're able to go, whoa, that makes me feel X. And then all of a sudden you're off to the races, right? It's just, I love that. I mean, you know, you can't sit, it's hard to sit down and go, okay, today's the day we're going to write a poppy. Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, that's just not kind of how it works. Well, you start forcing that, it sounds like it's going to be forced, right?
Yeah, that never really works for us that way, does it?
And I feel like, because we've been like together for so long, like we've been a band for like, I don't know, maybe like 8 years now, you don't have to go in with that mentality, I feel like, because we've done a few sessions before and you kind of sit there and truly find yourself, so what do we want to do today? And it kind of can feel a little bit awkward, actually. Mm. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's maybe right. You have to talk about what you want to write or something first. And sometimes I find that quite hard, because sometimes, like you say, if I hear the beat or whatever, it will like evoke this feeling out of me and I'll be like, oh, fuck, that's like there and I need to get that out. So yeah, it's really dependent on the day.
Have you written a lot with outside writers?
We only write like with ourselves. Okay. Apart from on the EP, we did a song with a guy called Saxofini. And that was the first time we wrote with someone else and had them on the, because he's a producer, he produced it, and it was the first time we went in with someone else. And it came out really, really well. But we just do everything in-house. Like, we write it, we record it, we produce it ourselves. Like, and so I think we kind of find it quite hard to come out of that. But we do want to work with other people more, actually, now. Just because people with great brains are just going to bring great things. So.
Sure. I would have guessed that, in not having done the super deep dive on the discography or the, like, the All Music or the writers, I actually would have guessed the opposite, that there were more writers in the mix than just the two of you, just because the breadth of the music is breadth is wide. Mm. It's so wide. It's like you go from, like Justin said, you go from one thing to the other, and it doesn't seem to be like, it's like the point of the thing is, let's make some great music that we feel represents whatever we're doing that moment or that chapter in our lives. But so that's the interesting part to me, is that it's basically just the two of you, but yet
there was four of us.
Okay.
So all of this writing so far has been four, but me and Alex have done like the majority of the last EP.
And our guitarist George writes with us as well.
But there was four of us this whole time. Yeah. So everything that's out there has been four of us.
Gotcha. But not necessarily outside songwriters that are brought in to write songs. One. Gotcha. Yeah.
No, just the band.
Yeah.
Is there a certain theme that runs in your songs? Or because there are times or songs that I think that it's very empowering. There's songs about empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly songs about failed relationships. There's you have one great line. You have many great lines, but I love and I want more, where it says, I'm not a happy ending.
Oh yeah.
I fucking love that idea of like, hey, you're going to go in this relationship to me, and guess what? At the end of it, I'm going to hurt you regardless of what you do. Yeah. This is not going to work out well for you, but let's have fun for a while.
Exactly. And that's exactly it. It's like, that's not tied too much to it. Like, this might not be the thing that is forever, but it can be the fucking best thing right now. And like that. Yeah. But there is the themes. A lot of like the earlier stuff was based like heavily around my mental health, just because I was like so consumed by it. I couldn't do anything or think about anything else. And then it's kind of been like moving around. Like, I feel like I'm like progressing in myself, in my personal like health.
It's kind of been a journey, and like how you've grown and overcome things, isn't it?
If you listen to the music at the start, I'm scared and I don't know how I'm going to get out of this, and then it moves on and I start to like come out of it, where I'm twisting it on its head a little bit with songs like Call Me a Saint, where I'm like, okay, I'm scared, but I'm proud of myself. And then it gets to things like Seize the Power, I'm like, fuck this. And then it gets to the point where we're in this point, Welcome to My House, and it's like, I'm talking about, I'm all of this bad stuff, but actually I'm perfectly imperfect, in a sense. Like, I'm coming to accept it. I'm like, I feel like each song and each chapter and every year through my life, I feel more accepting to what's happening and who I am and stuff like that. And I feel like you can hear it in the words and stuff.
is this fear, is this a fear that you have just anxiety driven? Is this something you had for a kid, as a child, and as an adult, is it the same thing, or is it kind of morphed over time?
Yeah. I was having panic attacks and anxiety disorder, and it kind of just like flipped my whole world around. Like I would do everything by myself, and then I couldn't leave the house. And I was like, what the hell's going on? And I started going to lots of therapy. And then, of course, like, it's always loads of stuff that's from your childhood and everything's trauma gets stuck in your body. And it was like that, that was the thing that kind of flipped the switch in me. And it was just my whole world just changed. And I was like, what? So it kind of started from that, like the writing. And that's kind of in the first album, Don't Wait Till Tomorrow. And we did like a couple EPs before that. But yeah, it all started from that.
Alex, is that something you've also dealt with, any kind of issues in your own life that you placed into the music?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, sort of music has always been like something that's got me through like difficult times, whether it's listening to music or playing music. Like, yeah, it's always been the biggest thing to get me over any like hardships in my life, for sure.
Sure. So it's a great therapy, any kind of creative endeavor.
I always wonder too, what the hell is it about music that can do that?
Yeah.
It's this magical potion that just sometimes, especially as a creative person, because then you can just let things spill out into it, right? But even as music fans, non-musical people, right? They turn to music as the thing. Yeah. And it just blows my mind. It's like,
And I feel like it gets stronger as I get older. Like I get more moved by like songs that I liked when I was younger, but it's like even more intense now when I hear them, if I've not heard them for a long time.
It's the stacking of experiences in your life on top of one another that kind of build that, it's the mesh that makes it even stronger, right? It's fascinating. Yeah.
You know, you just mentioned a really interesting thing. I'm curious from both of you, when there's songs that you grew up with that were powerful in your life back then, and you were just somebody who liked music, you didn't realize it was going to be your path, then you become musicians, you go back and listen and go, oh, hell, how did they make that record? Or I totally understand it. Or like, my God, they must have just woodshopped forever on this one. Is it a different vibe when you have when you have an understanding of writing music and the business itself? What's that like? What's that epiphany like?
Sometimes I think, like, sometimes a song comes really easily. Like it's just there. And then sometimes I think, how the fuck do people write a song? And I just forget how to write a song, because you have to almost like, it's quite a spiritual thing, really. If you're like really touching on what you, if you want to say something really personal and strong and like lock into that moment. Sometimes I'm like, how do you even do this? But when you do write a song and it feels really good, like you can just see it, like you can see where you're standing, you can see if it's like raining, if the sun's out, if you're in the woods, or if you're, I don't know, it's like you feel it, like I can see it when we're on stage playing the song. We've probably only just written half the song, because it feels like it is a moment happening. And I guess then for songs like, I don't know, because I guess, because like a song for me that changed, that I love so much, is So Real by Jeff Buckley. And sometimes when I think about that song, I'm like, you know, that's such a, was he just sitting there and he just wrote it? Like, how do people write songs? Like, it feels, because it's such this magnificent thing, and it's like massive songs and they're around the whole wide world. They seem like this big glorious thing, but he probably was just sitting in his room on his own, like with his guitar. I don't know. It's like probably really, the story of making the song is just, you just sitting in a room, either with yourself or someone else, and catching.
And from lots of interviews of like my favorite artists and things like that, it's often like their best songs seem to just come like almost out of nowhere. Like when they stop trying and they just let it happen. You know? That seems to just.
Oh yeah. And it is too contrived, as you can, the audience can sense it right away. It's funny you mentioned So Real. I always think about that song, and just the shimmery guitar on it is enough. He doesn't even have to sing.
I know.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, he was definitely, someone handed him his backside. That's what that song was about.
I have that same feeling with radio talk show. Is that what it's called? The Radiohead song on Romeo and Juliet.
Oh yeah, on the soundtrack.
The guitar, I don't know, there's something that guitar like actually gets inside of my body. I don't feel like that about any guitar I've ever heard, apart from that one.
Well, that's an interesting little segue, maybe, or a little diversion. What instrument and what sounds are the ones you find are most inspiring to you?
Most inspiring.
Oh, I stumped you. This is fantastic.
it's hard to pinpoint one particular one.
Piano. I always really enjoy piano.
I think it's often, but yeah, it's like, or for me, it's like strings. Mm. Strings, like listening to an orchestra or something like that does something to, I think, because I don't understand it in the same way I do, like listening to a guitar. I'm listening in a different way, maybe.
Yeah.
But
I also love the synth. Like whenever I hear like a really hard, like the bass synth that we always use, I love that thing. It immediately gives me like a cool vibe and I'm just like, yes.
Yeah.
I think about a synth. What do I think about? I don't know. Maybe I've been listening to a lot of New Order lately. Maybe that's what made me think of that.
I was listening to New Order today, actually.
Which one?
Album. I found it on my phone, but it's one of the early ones. But I'm more familiar with Joy Division. I've only recently started.
Yeah, listening. Absolutely.
Yeah,
I really like it.
Well, the thing that keeps popping up for me is the synth wave stuff, like Gunship and the like. Talk about to get your full impact from synth. I mean, like the whole thing is like driven by that whole tonality. I've been vibing on that pretty good too. And it also kind of takes you back to when you wish the 80s could have been done over again, because when I grew up, it was just the glam rock, the glam bands, and it was like it's just a cascade of those bands. And then all of a sudden, 10 years later, Justin, you look back and you're like, that music wasn't really all that good. It didn't sound good. It didn't sound good. They couldn't sing very well. It was all pretty superficial. You know, it's like, God, I wish I could have grown up in a different era of music. You know, I think I grew out of it pretty well.
If you grew up like 3 or 4 years earlier, like musically proficient, you would have heard Ultravox and all those bands that are using that sound, that sound amazing. And I'm so glad that kids are grabbing onto that sound. This kid, 20-something kid, tried to show me the Gunship thing, and I'm like, yeah, this has been done a long time ago.
Long time ago.
But yeah, it's awesome that you're listening to it, because maybe it'll feed you down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, it's interesting how different the tones and textures come in and out of fashion. Like, one minute they're the coolest thing in the world, and the next it's like considered really lame. It's always like a circle.
And it was, and with synth though, and with that type of synth heavy music, that was a brand new thing because the technology didn't exist, right? So that's now there's some forms of music that have been, obviously, whether it's piano music or it's orchestral music, it's like those instruments have been around for, I don't know, however long, right? 1,000 years or whatever. But with synth, that's when the paradigm really shifted.
Yeah.
Right. That's like electronic music didn't happen. Yeah. Bach wasn't writing the concerto in synth minor.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Right. So it's interesting how it is completely cyclical too. It's crazy. I mean, my daughter's 15 and she looks like she could have been in Singles, in the movie Singles. It's like, you know, the ripped jeans and the flannel. It's crazy. And the music is kind of reflective of that too, that she listens to. So
yeah,
it's crazy.
Hey, let me ask you, musically, style of music, you guys, again, kind of run the gamut. You've had all these different influences. Let me ask you about your live performance, your live presentation. Was there certain acts you guys used to go see, or maybe still see, that you kind of go, that's who we want to be as a live act? That's going to be our tone. That's going to be our mood. That's going to be our energy. This is the crowd reaction we want. Was there some bands that turned you on to a certain like presentation?
I grew up going to a lot of like heavier shows, like metal shows and things like that. Our music is pretty far from that, but I feel like in terms of like energy, we give we really go for it on stage, and I want to have that kind of intensity of like when I used to go and see those metal shows.
Like what? Like who was that? Who were those metal bands?
Bands like I've seen like Mastodon probably like 10 times, and also more like progressive stuff like Mars Volta and stuff like that.
For me as well, like, so when we first started, I had like this floor tom, and I stole it from Florence and the Machine because I loved Florence and the Machine. And I had a floor tom when we started out, and I would literally probably hit it about 3 times. And then about
the ribbons,
like,
on the sticks.
Yeah, and they get stuck. And it was really impractical. And so I, and then about like 6 months later, I was like, I've just, this isn't what, this isn't me. I'm just, I saw it on someone else and I liked it and I wanted to try it. So then I got rid of it. But I must say, like, I feel like we, you know, we used to do a good, like, a note, like a fun show. And then we did this tour with Bring Me the Horizon, and that was an arena tour. And this was the first time we went in arenas. And I remember watching them the first night and I was like, oh, that's a show. I felt like I hadn't seen a show yet, really, in the way that energy kind of fucking goes. Because to be honest, I never really, I, you know, what was like the heaviest thing I would go and see before that? I don't really listen to heavy music. So for me, it was like to see that energy in the crowd. And that's where the crowd's at. The crowd's at like the more heavier shows. And that's the crowd I want. I love that. And anyway, saw them the first night. And like I kind of said, like, I was like, what the fuck? I was like, that's a show. That's a fucking show. And then like the next night, we were just like, right, bang, just like running around. I don't know. It gave I think everyone the confidence to be able to go and do that themselves. It was just like, it was a good turning point. And I think that was the turning point for me as a performer to be like, fucking move, go out there, move.
Yeah.
Also I can't stand still anyway, cause I'm probably more nervous when I'm standing still. So I'm just like,
plus in an arena, there's room to do it. And if you don't take advantage of that, then you're kind of, then people
seem like, small.
Yeah.
I
mean,
Yeah. It's funny, you know, pop though can be presented whenever you guys kind of pull out the kind of the pop card on some of your songs, it can be presented with teeth, you know, so the audience feeds off that. I mean, which brings me to a couple different points and I'm going to go off in a few tangents, but it's all going to tie into this. Speaking of young, aggressive pop fans, you guys, a few years back threw a Hail Mary doing the, doing the Taylor Swift cover. Right.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
It's a double-edged sword because you're like, hey, we're going to attract a lot of new fans. We're going to have people listening to us, but you're also, they are also some of the most vicious people in the world. The idea that 16-year-olds to 40-year-old women can have fangs out when it comes to dealing with Tay Tay. But what was the reaction like when you guys did that? I know you guys have so much going on currently, but I'm just curious as someone seeing this going, what was the reaction?
No, Taylor Swift reposted it. That was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a nice surprise.
She chimed in on it.
She reposted it on her story, yeah. Ooh,
good so we were Lord like, almighty.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It was, you know, it was good. But it's fact, like, I love pop. I, like, grew up in pop and Motown. Like, that's, like, what I grew up on. And that's, like, my favorite. That's where my heart is. And it was really fun to do that cover. But like nothing came from it. Like, I don't know. I feel like if say like maybe, I don't know, 10 years ago, someone like Taylor Swift reposted you, then like it sometimes directs all their fans to you, doesn't it? It's like, it could make a big move. Like, I think we talk about it when one of the Arctic Monkeys wore the Royal Blood t-shirt on stage and then it kind of like was this massive ripple effect, but it, you know, nothing like that happened. It was like, I just feel it's so hard to get people's attention these days, but just Taylor Swift reposting it was it for me. So.
Yeah. Well, you say that, but it's funny. Cause like, what's her name? But Kylie Jenner can wear a Slayer t-shirt and all of a sudden it's major news.
Yeah.
You know, we live in a very funny culture.
Yeah. Corey Taylor had a Motley Crue t-shirt on at his show last weekend in Louisville. And I was just kind of like, that's an interesting one. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Just, hey, you know what? You like what you like, right? So,
yeah, exactly. And pop music. Yeah. I mean, it's so funny when people think of pop music, they just think recent pop music. Pop music goes back to the Bay City Rollers and Gary Glitter and all that other stuff. So, yeah, pop's amazing. Pop's amazing. So I want to talk about, you mentioned Bring Me the Horizon. Obviously, you guys have done some work with Fever 333, but talking about people, since we're talking about the cruise going forward and the Shiprocked, and Alan was on earlier with you, two of the people you have worked with have been with us. That's Jairus Johnson and Grandson. How do you come up with collaborations, and how do you decide? Does it someone just go make a call and go, hey, I dig your stuff, you want to do something? Or is it kind of like you kind of feel it out for a while? How do you go about that?
So the Grandson thing, that came around actually by our label, and we didn't know Grandson at that point. But what's cool is that actually now we do know him. And last year I was in LA and I was at a party and I just bumped into him. This was the first time we met face to face. And we were like, oh my God. And then we did like a session and stuff before, but it was on Zoom because it was in COVID and obviously like opposite sides of the world. But yeah, and we went to his show the other day in London actually. And
yeah, he's great.
Yeah. And then we hung out a bit when we were over there. Like it's nice because it wasn't like at first an organic relationship, but now it is. Like it was just like it was a recommendation from the label, like, oh, we should remix this song. Like there's this really cool guy called Grandson, and we were like, sounds amazing, let's do it. And the fucking remix was just sick. We changed our live way we played that song to that version because it's just cooler. But yeah,
so, yeah, when I heard it, I was like, that bass line's way better than my
voice. It's really cool.
Stolen it for the live show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And who did you say?
Oh, Jairus Johnson.
Jairus Johnson. Oh, yeah.
Jairus. So we just both collabed on that, on eSport G2. Yes. And last year, so we just went to Berlin last December, first time we met each other. And we were just in like this bowling alley with just all the gamers, and it was like the sweetest experience. Like everyone's so lovely, and yeah, me and Jairus has just like jumped on the track, and he's really lovely. And did you say Jairus did it last year?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
He seemed like, and that's those two guys would be good guys to chat with about the cruise and what to expect, because it seems to me, and it's more than a feeling, they both came back after the fact and said that they had a great time, and they were all involved with our guests, and our guests really loved them. And I feel like they understood it. It takes a little, it might take a second sometimes to kind of figure it all out. But by day two, everybody starts clicking and going, okay, I understand what this is all about. And they certainly had a great time. So definitely hit them back with a quick text or two saying, hey, tell me the tricks here. So. Yeah, it's super cool. And we love it when all the guests collide like that, because it's like it just makes it more feel, you know, super family like. So it's super cool that you guys had those existing relationships.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
So you guys are going to be rolling out here in a few weeks to this neck of the woods with Barnes Courtney.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you worked on the track Anthem with him, right? Yep. And I gotta tell you, this is to me it's a standout track only because I love Lana Del Rey. And your voice, I was just like, holy shit, it just sounds, and I don't like to ever compare, but I had to just go, that sounds dead on. Is she any inspiration? And is there anything about her, or do you just happen to sound like her?
Just on that track, or?
That one track was like really stuck out, like a thumb.
Well, she's really influential for me. I love her music.
Mm. Yeah.
I love her music, but she was not in my mind writing that song.
Just the voice is what struck me.
But we have this song called Heavy, which is like one of the very, very early songs, and that is actually really Lana vibes as well. And because I listened to her one of her new songs the other day, Say Yes to Heaven, and it sounds Heavy was kind of like has a similar vibe, and I was like, whoa, that's so weird. But yeah, I don't know, I don't hear it on Anthem, but I love Lana Del Rey.
She's listening to your stuff.
Yeah, I got the Lana and the Lana and the Gwen Stefani combo for me.
Oh yeah, I'm a big fan of Gwen.
Yeah,
big fan of both of them.
Isn't it funny when we start to admit this stuff out live?
But Gwen Stefani. What? I mean, look, you're a product of what you listen to and what you like. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, everybody's somebody else. Of everybody else. You know, but it's
for me. I'm more like I took lots of stuff from like girl bands like the Marvelettes, the Shirelles, and the Shangri-Las. Like that was like my favorite thing kind of growing up, and because I love how hard the voice is, but like I don't know, it has like this like tanginess to the voice, but it also is just
and a sweetness.
And Amy Winehouse is like one of my favorite singers ever. Lady Gaga.
I think we just may have hit, we may have just hit a new high here, Justin, on Making Waves. What are we, episode 112?
112.
I've never heard anyone, I think 112 or 13, I've never heard anyone call a vocal tangy. I applaud you.
It's so funny you're mentioning all those
vocal.
I mean, the Motown bands you were talking about, all those girl groups, is so funny when I think of their voices, because Ronnie Spector made it all sound like a wall of sound when those girls sang, right?
Beautiful.
It was like almost the first like fuzz, like reverb, like just distorted voices with some of those girls when they sang. It's awesome. It's so cool. Yeah. So, okay, you're coming over here in October. You're going to do this run with Barnes Courtney. Let me ask you, how are, a lot of American acts have had to go to UK or wherever, like whether it's the Strokes or Dirty Honey or whoever, to kind of break. To kind of like, American audiences weren't biting. They go over there, Enemy, all these things, and they're doing well, they're playing well. And then they come back over here and they're starting to get a little traction. Is it hard for English bands to come over to the States these days, or go through the same thing?
I would say yes, because we haven't done it yet. We've been a band for like 8 years. We've played three shows, and that was just one in New York, and then we've done two in LA. We've never toured America yet, so I'm gonna say like it's so expensive.
Yeah, it's getting more and more expensive, so it's harder for bands starting out to.
We wouldn't be able to do it unless we had. I'm just saying this honestly because it is what it is. We wouldn't be able to do it unless we had the label helping us out, because it's like it's insane. Because obviously it's so much bigger. You know, UK is like the longest journey you're going to have to take to get to another show is 9 hours. That's right. The longest, right?
Oh, it's a sprawl here. It's terrible.
Exactly. Yeah. And I feel, so I'm so excited that we're finally getting to come over and do it. But it is hard. Like we've tried to do it before and it never worked because we didn't have like the support to come over there. And also that's another thing, like we wouldn't be able to put our own tour on there just yet because we haven't kind of had that push over there. So it could like just be, it could just like not give back anything. So we need to, we want to do our own tour, but we just need to wait a sec and like jump on the right stuff. But yeah, like you need the support to go over there because it's just, it's hard. Like it's a lot.
Yeah. And it looks like, what are we looking at? October 16th?
Mm-hmm.
Philadelphia, the Brooklyn Bowl. Okay. What's the anticipation of what's the planning stages right now? Are you guys rehearsing every day? Are we've got the set figured out? Or are you still figuring things out? Where are you in the process?
We've got a pretty rough idea of the set.
Yeah.
We start some rehearsals.
We've only got 35 minutes though. So
yeah.
It's kind of hard because you're like, what are we?
Yeah, get started, right?
Yeah. So we're like,
yeah, with every record we put out, it gets harder and harder to do a set list, especially when it's like a support set list. You're like squeezing your favorite ones in there. It's difficult.
So let me ask you, at that point, since you write that, you're trying to gain fans, you're trying to gain that following. Do you kind of just go to your Spotify and go, that's the biggest one, that's the biggest round? Do you just pick the most reactive two ones, or you just say, fuck it, we're going to play what we want to play, and if they like it, great?
No, we do like, we'll kind of go off of like what reacts well when we play it live, because if the people are having a good time, we're having it. It's the energy. You're just like, you're just like flying. So we do it like that. We also play the ones that we love as well and we want to play. But, you know, we make sure it's like, because I hate going to shows and if it's an artist and they play none of the massive like hits that everyone's there to hear, it's like,
play your popular.
The song for you is. So we get like a nice mix in. Definitely not.
No bass solo.
So in 35 minutes, do you have, it sounds to me like there might be a little bit of playing it by ear in that, like if it's going well at the start and there's songs, I mean, is it a nightly thing where you're just going to look at the songs that are available to you and put together and craft a set list for that particular evening based on the night or the two nights before?
Maybe.
There'll be an element of that because it's going to be some kind of audience as well to what we've played to before. And we often just feel it out. Like sometimes a certain song feels better earlier on in the set.
So
As the tour goes on, we'll figure it out.
That's a big thing that we've been we're always learning, but like the tempo of the song, can really, if you, I don't know, we played like this at Reading Festival. We played the set and there was this, we have the song called Ordinary. It came after this new song we have called I Want More. And when we started playing Ordinary, it was like slow motion. It was horrible. So we quickly changed that for the next show.
It's an interesting thing as far as music fans go, that they may not understand that 35-minute set just seems like a blink, and it is a blink kind of for everybody, but there really is a pacing and a lot of thought that has to go into how to pull that off properly. And in a fan or somebody just viewing your music is going to sit there and either and really enjoy it, or that the wrong set, the wrong order could just turn somebody off who may have otherwise really liked it, right? Because the pacing or how you start or how you finish, or all of a sudden there's a lull that shouldn't be there. It's like because there's a place for a lull, right? There's a beginning, a middle, and an end to however long the set is. But if you get them wrong in there, you can kind of start to lose somebody, right? So I think it's an underappreciated build is the building the set list, the art of building the proper set list.
Yeah. No, totally.
You know, if you're a band that only has 35 minutes worth of music or 35 minutes worth of ideas, it's one thing. But when you have music that you can choose from, because y'all have a good repertoire at this point, I mean, boy, it's like trying to build the perfect bowl of soup. You know, it's like you got one chance to do it, and then if you get the ingredients wrong, you throw the whole thing out. You know, so no pressure, no pressure. You got this.
Hey, what was it when you were growing up? Living in Bristol, seaside area, very picturesque. But what was the music scene like there for you growing up?
We're not actually from we're in Brighton now, but we're not actually
Brighton. Sorry, Bristol. Sorry, Brighton. That's Brighton. Right. God, it's easy to get to because listen to some Massive Attack. So
yeah.
similar kind of town.
Yes.
Yeah, so, we're not actually from here, so I'm from like a small town called Folkestone in Kent, and Al's from Essex.
Yeah, I'm from Essex.
Okay. And
so instead of going to college, I did sixth form. I don't know if you guys have that. It's basically just you stay in the school, and it's like another 2 years.
Well, they have like high school. You have high school till like 18, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's like college then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, I did that, and I was doing music. And there was three people in my whole class. Like, there was only three people there. Like, the scene is there was really no scene there. So when I moved to Brighton when I was 18, I was like, it was like a piece of magic. Just like, I was like, wow. Because then all my friends, like, love music, were doing music. And I was just, it's just being surrounded by the people who, like-minded people. It just really made such a big difference. And every other person's got a guitar on their background here, so
yeah.
You know, it's everywhere. It's just a good feeling.
Yeah, it was similar for me as well. I grew up in Romford in Essex, and there wasn't really much of a music scene at all there either. So yeah, moving down to Brighton, it was just it was so refreshing. And the whole band met at a music school in Brighton, so we've been friends like years now. How long have we been friends for?
Like
12 years or something. Yeah. And we're all in the same circle of friends, playing music and in various bands together, going and seeing each other's shows. And yeah, it's an inspiring place, Brighton.
It's small as well. So like you'll bump into everyone walking down the street.
What are your, I always like to ask these questions to musicians. They never picture themselves doing anything anywhere else. But if you weren't doing this line of work, if this wasn't your passion, if this wasn't, what would you be doing?
The only other job I've ever had is making coffee, so maybe doing that.
A barista?
A barista. Yeah, that's all I've done outside of music.
Well, you must be then. You're very essential still in the band, though, so good. There you go.
Yeah, that's right.
I love making
coffee. What are we doing? I want to write a book.
Author. See, what I like these answers because I feel like sometimes if you ask that question and someone has an answer right away and they're very committed to that answer, you know, it's like I always, coming from a management background, I would talk to my clients and say, look, this has got to be something that you cannot imagine doing anything else. Like there can't even be there can't be a plan B, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise that plan B, when there's hard times and there's lean times and there's financial problems and pressure, that plan B starts to creep up in there. and start going, hey, maybe you should. So it's like, I always told my clients, listen, there is no plan B. Like, this is the plan A. And then the longer you go and the more you commit to it, the more options there will be in order to enhance that original plan A. Or maybe the plan A has a little bit of a detour in it, but it's still part of plan A, you know? So I love the fact that you guys, the both of you, had to kind of think about it for a second. Mm, yeah. I don't know. Maybe, you know, the I don't know maybe is really great. And I think that bodes well for your future. So that's exciting. Good answer.
You're exactly right, though. There's like... You have to go through this thing of being almost like deluded, where so many people are like, "Oh, you still doing
that? Is that all you do?" Oh. Okay. Like, and
hey, you know,
sometimes it makes you feel like, am I mad for doing this? But
yeah, but that's what the power of the friends that you have and the bandmates, right? That lean on one another to go, hey, you know, we got to hang in there because what else are we going to do, right?
That. Especially right if we're on stage, like, and if we've had a bad show before, that is like when you're so thankful to have like a band, because you're like, oh my god, if I was doing this on my own, I'd be freaking out. But it's like you kind of can just look at each other and like cry, laugh, and and then be like, yeah, okay, it's all right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, well, listen, I don't mean to say that you opened a can of worms, but now we got to talk about the worst show ever.
Worst show ever.
Ooh. Yeah, what was your worst show ever? Like, what caused you to look at your bandmates and go, oh my god, was that as horrible as I thought it was?
This, we did a show supporting, what's the band?
The Cortinas.
You remember. Alex remembers. It must have been. She could have been bringing up any show, but Alex was like, yeah, okay, I know the one you're talking about.
We did a show with them, and it was a sold out, like, 3,000 people, and I shit you not, like, not one person clapped after we like finished the songs, and like basically no one was looking, and it's like it was horrible, and I was like, are you fucking joking?
we played with them in Manchester Arena as well, and it was like the Manchester Derby was going on.
We should only tell one bad story. We don't wanna...
Wait a minute, how many bad gigs have there been, you two?
Basically, that band are great and we like them, but they shouldn't have any supports because the people don't like them.
Yeah, they're there for one reason. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that reminds me, I saw the Deftones open for Van Halen in probably 1992 or 93. Could that have been that early? Yeah, probably 93, 94. And I mean, you want to talk about angry people. Like, not understanding anything what they were doing at all. And here's these old Van Halen fans. And that was hard to watch. I felt, and I liked it, but that was hard to stomach. So
there's always the good day pivot to your best show. Obviously there's a lot of great shows, but the Reading experience must've been quite something.
Yeah. That was our third time playing it. And that was our favorite time.
Yeah. Do you find with those festivals, people tend to be, as opposed to just going and opening for a certain band in a certain place, and it's just their fans and you're having to kind of battle them. Festivals obviously open a broader scope of minds. Like, hey, I'm here to listen to everything. Is that kind of your perception too? It's like, it's going to go over well regardless, because we're going to have at least 10% of 100,000 people are going to like us.
I don't know. I think like, you kind of get to a point because you can really stress yourself out before the show, being like, fuck, what if no one's there? And you know, done that like 1,000 times, and it kind of like it kind of ruins the show a little bit, because you just don't know who if what's going to happen, and for some reason we pretty much always clash with a headline at those big festivals, but it's honestly it was so good and I loved it, but I just, there was like a point in me where I was like, I'm either going to get so caught up in thinking about who's going to be there and how many people are going to be there, and I'm not going to be able to enjoy myself. And I thought, sometimes I do this thing, and I'll be like, this might be the last time you ever do this. So just have a good time. I just let myself feel into it, and I had a really good time.
What does Bruce Dickinson say? He said the best thing you can ever do in that situation is you sing to the person in the back of the room like they're in front of the house, and you're always going to win. So, yeah.
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 Yeah. Go ahead, Justin.
We both said them at the same time.
Well, I think I know where you're going. I think I know where you're going, and you think you know where I'm going.
Well, I want to know where you're going.
We're both probably wrong.
Okay. you go first, age before beauty.
I kind of want to walk the plank right now, and I don't even want to, explain it, if that's okay with you.
Don't.
You the same? That's where you were going?
Yeah. I wasn't going, but I like what you're doing now.
Okay. We're going to walk the plank, ladies and gentlemen.
Cool.
What villain do you secretly cheer for?
In anything. It's not a secret, but the Joker.
It's not a secret? No. Is it, why does everybody root for the Joker?
Surely. Dub, does it? Oh, is that what?
No. This is what I'm saying. You're walking the plank. You never know what's going to happen. You may fall off the end of the plank, or you may be saved, but you're walking off the plank. So these are, we're without a rope. We got no safety harness right now.
So that
you secretly root for the Joker.
It's not secretly. So should I find someone
overtly?
I secretly?
No, it's okay. It's okay. There's no wrong answers with walk the plank. Okay. Let me go to the second part of that I'm just making up as we go. Which Joker has been your favorite Joker?
Heath Ledger, for sure.
Heath Ledger. Okay. Heath Ledger plays the best Joker. Oh, but Jack and
Phoenix. Yeah, see, it's a tough question. It's
really tough because, yeah, Joaquin Phoenix was amazing.
Crazy, right?
I Heath Ledger, though, has a certain thing, the likability about the character. You didn't completely hate the guy because he was such a prankster. And maybe that's just the way that Ledger played him. The other one, Joaquin, that was like Taxi Driver, like just so dark.
Yeah. And also,
no joy.
Yeah, and Joaquin, you felt sorry for the Joker in that one.
Yeah.
Whereas in Heath Ledger, you were just like, whoa. He was like, he was just feisty.
It's almost like hard to compare them because they both brought out such different sides of.
Nah, Heath, Joker, I'm going right? Heath.
You're going Heath.
Yeah.
Going Heath, okay. Okay. Who
I'll stick to Heath.
Okay, what villain do you secretly or not so secretly root for, Alex?
I don't know. T-1000 in Terminator 2.
Okay. All right. I like it. Great answer, man.
That's I love fantastic. That. Like, T-1000.
he was all coy. He's like, oh, shucks. I don't know. But it sounds like he's been thinking about this for like a decade. He's like, oh, they finally asked my question.
I kind of wanted him to kill John Connor. John Connor was getting on my nerves in Terminator 2.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. That's great. All right, I have another walk to plank. Is that okay, Justin? I don't want to impede on your impedance. Unless you have one. Are you ready? Are you ready for one?
I do. No, but yeah, but go ahead though.
This is a question that I like to ask our guests. And maybe that makes me depressing. But what's the last what's the last thing that either one of you cried about?
What did I cry about?
Oh. T-1000?
Let me think about this one. The last thing I cried about was like I was just scrolling on TikTok and there was a little video of these two old ladies and they were sisters and they made this pact to never say goodbye. They never say goodbye and they were it was making me cry so hard because they were like, we've had a good time. It's actually making me feel sad talking about it. It's like the sweetest video and it was the last time they ever saw each other.
Do you think the last time they would wish that they had said goodbye if they knew it was going to be the last? Did that work?
I'll see you on the other side.
Oh, okay. Aw.
It's very lovely.
For me, I got a little choked up. We watched Almost Famous the other day, and I really loved that film. And there's a bit where Zooey Deschanel says to her brother, like, I can't remember the exact words, but it's like, if times get tough, go to your room and find your best friends, like in your records. I butchered what she actually said, but it kind of choked me up a bit.
Because you can look for comfort
in your music, in your record collection.
This is also the first time that I think we made a guest cry on the podcast, so there is that. And so I'm sorry, but it's good. It's good to learn. And it's also good to, it's probably a good healthy thing to remember the last time you cried. So I'm glad I brought that up. Like for me, it's
something like really depressing,
really dark.
Yeah. I'm just
right. You're crying about it's a positive thing. So it's, you know, there's the complete whole individual probably cries for both, and I think that's wonderful. So I'm glad.
I'm still processing the fact that Almost Famous brought a tear to Alex's.
it got me. It really got me.
I know, man. It's kind of like the thing is like when the sister. I was talking to him, like, burn a candle when you listen to this album, when you listen to Who's side two of the, what is it, Tommy?
Yeah.
It made me think about me when I was young listening to music, and it made me a bit emotional. Yeah.
Sure.
It always made me sad because they never brought up they never brought up the father in that movie. Anyway.
I guess it's not. Yeah.
They didn't.
Justin, do you have one?
Yes, I do. For both of you, what superpower do you wish you had, and what would you do with that power?
I
probably just fly.
Yeah,
right?
Mine's fly as well. Like, I want to fly. I dream about flying all the time.
Do you ever look up what that means?
Mm-hmm. I know what it means.
What does it mean?
I don't know. I'm just making shit up.
I used to sleepwalk when I was younger, and I would always end up downstairs in the kitchen at my mum's house. But in my dream, I was flying down the stairs. So, you know, I know something's happening.
I'm going to tell you exactly what it means. And this is from one of these things called dreams.com. It can signify your ability to overcome challenges and rise above difficult situations.
Nice.
Look at there that. You go. Look at that.
Either that or you're a fairy.
Maybe a little bit of both.
That's right.
So before we get Alex's answer, though, I have dreams about flying, and I'm flying. But the problem is that I always lose energy, or I lose my ability to fly. So I come down to the ground, and I'm fighting to get back up. And then I try to fly again, and I can only fly a little bit. And then it comes to the point where I can't fly at all. I'm just standing there. So Justin, I think that means that ultimately
you're carb loading.
I'm carbo loading. Yeah.
I'm not quite overcoming.
And eventually I'm being crushed by my unrealistic expectations.
But like when you're flying, right, you're not just like, are you? You're like, swimming.
Like I'm swimming in the air.
Swimming? No, I'm flying. I'm flying Superman style. I'm going after it. Yeah.
That's why you're falling. You need to swim.
Need to swim. More swimming. Just keep swimming.
You swim
far. I think you need to just get higher up into the airstream, put your wings out, and just glide.
Yeah, that's true. I need more melatonin. You know? Alex, what about you? What's your superpower?
Oh, yeah, I'm down with flight as well. I feel like
flying as well.
That's one.
Yeah.
Gotcha. See, invisibility was the other one that we get a lot, right, Justin? Mm-hmm. Invisibility.
Yeah. What would you do, Al? If you were invisible, what would you do?
No, I'm not. I'm not being interviewed. I'm not taking questions at this time.
All right.
You're gonna have to call my publicist. Taylor, will you answer that question for me? I'm not taking questions at this time. Sorry. My invisibility, I wouldn't want it. That's just dangerous, right? You just get yourself.
What's your guys' superpower of choice?
Justin, look at him. His hair. He's living it.
You have got amazing hair. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. What would my superpower be? What would it be? Mind reading.
Yeah, that's a good one. I feel like ones like...
It's good, but I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, if you're a kid, you're like, I can sneak into dressing rooms or some bullshit like that. Like, oh, you know what would be good, though?
Why is that bullshit?
What?
Hey, I think it would be kind of cool. Like, hey, you know what I'm going to do? I could sneak into a bank vault. The thing is, the product I'm trying to take out of said vault, I can't make invisible. So how do I get this out of here? It's just going to be a floating bag, and a teller's going to look like crazy. So how do I figure that out? That's my point. If I can do that, then I'll turn invisible.
So you're saying you're invisible and you can like get through vaults, like you can go through walls and stuff.
Well, he would just be invisible, and then at the end of the night when they close the vault, he'd be in it. He'd spend the night in it.
Yeah, they wouldn't sit him out.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm going mastermind. I'm going crime.
I think it'd be super fun though to also be invisible to play pranks on people, like the house is haunted or something, and do all kinds of stuff.
People, that'd be fun.
They did that to me. I get
turned invisible.
Really, they turn invisible one night. Freak me out.
Hold on, you get spooked real easy.
I get spooked really, really easy. And
how awesome is this? Because the Shiprock you're going to be going on, this is our haunted cruise. The theme is dark classic, and horror classic, and macabre.
Classic horror themed cruise.
Why is it haunted? Right. Why is it haunted?
It's not. It's just every year the theme of the cruise changes. Yeah. Like one year it was this, you know, a space theme, and the next theme was like old west. What's that?
Yeah. As long as it's actually not haunted, that's fine.
No, it's not actually haunted. Although some people would think that, I mean, you know, one man's whatever they say. I mean, it may be haunted. Who knows? I hope for your sake it's not. Yeah, Alan says, as far as we know, it's not haunted.
Okay, this is good news. But the guys, so we rented this little cottage in somewhere in England, and it had like nothing around it apart from like this old
little church.
Yeah, it
was right out in the sticks.
And which is already like to me, like not really my thing. And we were staying there, and I was in the shower, and they had one of those little portable speakers, and I just didn't really know about it. And I was just in the shower, and I was washing my hair, and I was like, and it was like, and I was like, what the fuck? And then I was like, but I didn't see this thing either. And then all of a sudden, it started going, mommy, and I was like, run out, and I started freaking out. I was like, guys, I'm freaking out. Like, I've got
to
go home.
You're about to pack your bags and leave.
Yeah, and I started texting my mum. I was like, mum, I'm freaking out. Like, something's wrong with this. She's like, I knew you shouldn't have gone there. And I was like, why are you saying that? I've got to stay here for a whole month and try and write some music. And she was like, yeah, I don't know. I was getting a bad feeling about that place. I was like, what? And then I was, in all seriousness, I didn't like it at all. And I packed my stuff and I told the guys, I said, I think I need to go home. And then they finally told me it was a joke. Like, I don't like that stuff. It freaked me out.
How did they pull off the joke? They tapped into the Bluetooth speaker and
yeah,
and just played like Exorcist.
that's some jokes 101. I like where their head's at. Keep it simple.
I can imagine it though. You're already kind of like up against it. Cottage out in the middle of nowhere,
yeah,
England. Exactly. Probably some haze and mist coming off the moors. You set yourself up for that.
Cabin in the woods. Look out.
The only lights was the stars and the moon.
Mm.
And, you know, I like a lamp outside the street lamp. I like those things.
Just
like,
not so much with the howling wolves.
Yeah.
Well, listen, it's been super fun hanging out with y'all for a little while here. I know for sure that our guests are really looking forward to seeing you on the ship. So like Alan said, if you ever need anything, just reach out to our team. We got a great group of people that want to take good care of you. And with that, do we have any final thoughts, Justin? What are we doing?
This drops on Monday, this coming Monday. We'll drop it on all our socials and our YouTube. So people who do watch this, make sure that keep in mind that starting October 1st, I believe, is when the first date is. That the first date? When is the first date?
Second. Oh, second. No, their first date. Sorry, your first date in Philly.
Oh, yes, 16th.
Mm-hmm. 16th. Okay, 16th. Okay, so yes. Go check out the tour with Barnes Courtney. Check them out. If they come to your town or if they're driving distance, go see them. Kind of get primed for Shiprock and also pick up their new album, Welcome to My House. It's on Republic Records. So thank you guys so much. We really appreciate it. I'm glad we finally made this happen.
Yes.
Success to success.
Well worth the wait. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you. Welcome to my house.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX, and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, We go all over the map, from Fall Out Boy to Slayer. Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.